Hi, this is Smriti Kirbanandan, your host for Health Forward Podcast. One of the most important things you can do for yourself is to take care of your health. Your road to discovering an all-inclusive, empathetic, and innovative healthcare ecosystem starts right now. Clinical decision support provides clinicians, staff, patients, and other individuals with knowledge and person-specific information to give the right healthcare at the right time. Our guest for today is Archie Mayani, Senior Vice President and Chief Product Officer for Decision Support at Change Healthcare. She spearheads innovative products that help decision-making for the healthcare workforce more precise, simple, and efficient. Archie, you are in the space to disrupt, innovate, and change healthcare. No pun intended here. Welcome to Health Forward.
Thank you for having me here. I'm looking forward to our discussion today.
What has inspired you to be in the field of healthcare?
So Smriti, what I would say is, you know, I grew up in India. I'm a child, of the 80s. And, if you were growing up at that time in that country, you were just automatically exposed to a lot of challenges. And in a way, you know, it sort of builds your grit up in sort of unforeseeable ways that wouldn't happen anywhere else. And I think I was probably about five, and, you know, my great grandmother, you know, who pretty much raised me, you know, since the day I was born, she was sick. I knew she was lying down, you know, for the last 2 days, you know, she wasn't eating anything, and she passed away. And obviously much later in life, you know, probably when I was 8 or 9, somewhere around that age, I understood that, you know, she actually died of asthma. She had asthma since she was, you know, since the age of 20. And if you think about it, she was in her late 70s, and something that was completely treatable, you know, she passed away from it. And to me, you know, I think it was the sign of those times and where I was living that felt like if I had to do something meaningful and something that could have a deep, wide social impact, healthcare would be one of those nobler and still very impactful things at scale, where I could have the tangible feeling at the end of the day where I am making somebody's life better. And I think that sense of purpose and mission has always been with me, and which has been sort of, you know, I'm so grateful for the career I've had in healthcare. You know, never sort of dreamt as I was growing up. But I couldn't have asked for a better fit in terms of, you know, living truly by that sense of mission and purpose to drive social change and impact. And, you know, as I've grown into this executive roles within healthcare, you know, it's been very important to see that I was the only brown person of color, not just woman, you know, in those executive rooms, and to be able to drive that change and be that change so that the next generation has a little bit of a chipped away ceiling, if you will, or the proverbial glass ceiling. I think that is also a very, very important goal for me that keeps me going.
So at Change Healthcare, Archie, you work at the intersection of technology, human touch, and rapid innovative solutions. What are some learning curves and challenges you have witnessed here?
You know, that's a very, very good question, because I'll tell you, it's been one of the most rewarding periods of my life, and probably because it has been one of the most challenging periods of our collective human lives, right? I joined Change right before the world as we knew was starting to disintegrate, somewhere in the middle of summer of 2019. And so I walk in, you know, very clear-eyed, focused on, you know, this offensive and driving growth like the rest of the world. But, you know, we had to adapt and pivot very, very quickly. So the first things first, you know, was, okay, how do we, you know, as we were sort of ramping up to better serve our customers, you know, during the pandemic, you know, the two big things we focused on, you know, we set up this COVID task force, if you will, and the two big ideas was, you know, how do we enable telehealth and remote care delivery, you know, using the solutions that we have today, and yet transforming them with cloud native technologies so that remote accessibility was still secure. And then I think the other big problem that, you know, that has always been a challenge, but I think it was aggravated so intensely by the pandemic, you know, the clinician burnout, you know, both physician and nurses, you know, how do we better leverage some of the newer technologies like machine learning or AI or whatever have you, to actually start, you know, facilitating avenues of remote and telehealth by taking away some of the non-value-added repetitive tasks, and yet, you know, keep improving the productivity, because, you know, God knows we needed them, and we needed them so much more than in the past 100 years or so. So to, you know, focusing on those two things, you know, some of the challenges were also very, very novel. So, you know, I talked about, you know, our indexing on cloud native technologies. One of the big reasons, you know, for us to be, you know, really focusing on innovating using cloud native was to actually support the cyber resilience that was needed. And that was especially if you remember, you know, in 2020 and 2021, you know, there were at least over 150 ransomware attacks on our healthcare systems, you know, both clinics, hospitals, and even large IDNs. And I remember it was, you know, a little under a year, and, you know, we have Change Healthcare's enterprise imaging system that was used by the country of Ireland, the health services executive, that's what it's called, it's HSC, you know, their healthcare system, you know, they were attacked in May of 2021. And, you know, it was a complete disruption for over a month, right? They couldn't access, you know, and this was a complete shutdown. This was not just, you know, sort of the solutions that were being used. And as a matter of fact, the ransomware actually, you know, the virus itself, you know, was set up via an email. So, you know, to be able to support our customers, you know, where they could feel like, you know, they could deliver the care without any disruption and yet feel secure about, you know, the sanctity of the patient data, and also, you know, being protected under these extraordinary, you know, disruptive times. I think to, you know, the other sort of, you know, challenge or opportunity, I would rather say, was around, you know, taking away those non-value-added tasks. And AI and deep machine learning algorithms seem to be a fairly straightforward answer, and yet not as straightforward as we thought about. You know, we had, you know, developed our own AI algorithm to pull up prior studies. And, you know, as we were looking for sensitivity and accuracy for our models, it became very clear that we have to, you know, start developing responsible, ethical AI, you know, start using data sets which were very, very diverse and not just from a particular, you know, sort of a overly dominated by a specific race or gender. And so to be able to responsibly create these new technologies and yet do more good than harm, I think that was, again, sort of the big learning curve that we went through, like any other organization that was driven by this mission of making the healthcare system better. So I think those two big sort of buckets of priorities or, you know, both in terms of learning opportunities and where the biggest progress was made overall by the healthcare system was truly tremendous.
Yeah, I love the focus on impact you just shared, which is focused on physicians. We had 900,000 physicians for a population of 300 million people. So to prevent them from burnout and also keep our system sustainable and protected is vital, especially given the pandemic as well. So I love your pointers. In the US, Archie, we're exposed to a spectrum of care. 30% of care is unnecessary. There's improper care. We have about 440,000 deaths per year, and there is obviously no care. Where and how do you think we would strike a balance to facilitate effective utilization management?
You know, that is a fantastic question, Smriti. And I think this is something that most of our thought leaders and think tanks are focusing on today. You know, we have, you know, we're probably one of the only countries that, you know, spend nearly twice as much to 16.9% of our, you know, I was reading those stats at the OECD report, the latest one that came out. and yet had the lowest life expectancy of any of the developed economies, you know, that is being measured by this this particular report. And to be able to truly integrate all of the innovations that have been possible from, you know, both sort of the provider sets of, you know, data and care delivery and the payer systems, which are really focused on affordability, I think we have to be able to sort of get away from this arms race, if you will, and start, you know, handling peace missions between these, you know, sort of two sides of the same network, or, you know, start creating these ecosystems between payers and providers. And that's exactly what actually the team that I lead today, you know, within Change, our clinical decision support team, that's our mission. You know, we have been a renowned industry leader and, you know, been one of the forefront here at the forefront, if you will, for our best evidence-based care guidelines for patients to improve their health outcomes and affordability. Those have been our core competencies. And yet, you know, I think we are absolutely at that point where, you know, using those care guidelines and setting them as the center stone of all of the care delivery is not enough. We have to be able to start evolving our distinct customer sets and mix of unique capabilities within the Change assets, you know, whether it is medical necessity or our clearance and authorization capabilities, and start creating these ecosystems of payers and providers to reduce the friction and really start engaging on shared goals of productivity, better care outcomes, and affordability. I think some of the things around, you know, clinical decision support and also, you know, how we integrate social determinants of health, those can be sort of the key to this lock, if you will. I remember my time at United Health Group, which is almost 10 years ago. I started out, you know, at the time when we had just begun to hear about value-based care, and there was not a real clean articulation what people meant by value-based care, and, or, you know, social determinants of health wasn't even a term coined at that point. And yet, you know, one of the most innovative whole patient care models, where we took these social determinants of health, whether it's, you know, food security, you know, economic housing, access to, you know, access to care and community resources, having this interdisciplinary team actually manage not only sort of the care processes and the care needs of the most underprivileged populations in the society, but also create a path for them to make better choices, you know, especially around substance abuse, domestic abuse, you know, safe housing. I think those sort of, you know, looking at the whole person really did show amazing outcomes in terms of affordability. If I remember the results accurately, you know, we saw some reduction of 60% utilization of ED resources, you know, just in the first 6 months of the program. And I know that the Accountable Care Act was sort of envisioned and designed to do exactly sort of, you know, sort of bring that whole person care into the view. Obviously, we've seen sort of the implementation has been a little bit fraught, but I do think that we are the country that is sitting, you know, on enormous amounts of data. And we are also actually one of the only countries who have a lot more focus on prevention. So when we think about population health, I don't think there is any other country that is more equipped and more set up for success than United States. So I do take a lot of hope and courage, and also sort of, you know, the future is far more optimistic for me than what I think it could have been even 10 years ago.
Love the focus, the precision, and all the hope. I think we need that, especially now. So appreciate that, Archie. So I'm pretty excited and intrigued to know more about Care Select, which is a product line focused on helping physicians make decisions precisely to give the proper care efficiently at the right time. If you had to paint a journey of impact for this product, what would that be?
CareSelect has been one of those crown jewels. The technology and the IP, came to us through our NDSC acquisition, but I think it has been one of those most amazing, pervasive, data-driven technology where data is actually put to work for driving the outcomes that you want to do, that you want to build out. And what do I mean by that? CareSelect has been a technology that actually aligns all of the patient care models and, what I mentioned earlier, the evidence-based clinical standards and guidelines. It brings them together to reduce the care variation and improve ordering appropriateness. And I think this is really about this idea of reducing waste in our healthcare system that gets truly amplified and addressed through CareSelect technologies that we have today with our CareSelect imaging and CareSelect lab solutions. The beauty of it is that both these solutions actually offer seamless EHR integration, which then allows hospitals and health systems to not only measure physician ordering against the clinical criteria, but also, how the patient outcomes have improved, with the implementation of this technology. So today we actually have over 95% of the market share. Obviously, a lot of it has been driven because of the PAMA mandate, but I think even if you look at sort of the earlier studies, you do see significant reduction in sort of this redundant ordering and encountering processes. The other piece that, we are absolutely stoked about is how do we take this CareSelect technology and really start building sort of the data insights and almost cultivating it as an infrastructure as a service. What we've started sort of rechristening as the EHR hub and point of care insights, we like to call it POCI just for fun. But really, those are sort of the next generation of technical capabilities using our most greatest and latest standards and technologies to support these new product introductions and bringing some of the business assets that we have within Change and also actually empowering providers and payers to leverage this technology to bring better insights, better longitudinal history, and a full longitudinal history at the point of care. One of the big things that we are excited about is modularizing actually the EHR clinical data access and then the data normalization and workflow integration into this, what we are calling the vNext architecture, as we start putting this foundation of, infrastructure as a service, both to, explore certainly new market opportunities, but also, really giving some of our customers, this enablement that they've never had. For example, a single Epic, FHIR API, it could enable the government services to improve chart retrieval margins and supporting electronic prior authorization pilots. The same API can be used by data science as a service to monetize enterprise imaging data assets and increase accuracy during clinical trials and patient identification. So, there are the vision is bold and the applications are multifaceted. So you can see why we are so excited about this technology and how much it can be leveraged to drive the innovations of that we need for the future.
Yeah, I love the bold concept, and there's a lot of pointers of fixing, which is physician burnout, giving patients the right care at the right time, and also leveraging technology. I think that's spectacular what you're doing within Change Healthcare. I believe data holds answers to many of our problems. How do you see SDOH being incorporated into the clinical workflow?
Oh my gosh, I could go on and on. I gave you the example of the sort of the whole patient care model that I talked about. Again, even sort of 10 years ago, before we knew what it was, it could show some amazing results in sort of lowering the utilization and truly, truly improving patient outcomes. I still remember, I had this, I would once in a while I would get these calls because this entire team was located in the field. You know, we had behavioral health counselors, we had case management team, we had physicians, we had community health workers, you know, were all in the field working with the patients and the members and trying to connect them to the resources. And once in a while, I would get a phone call saying, you know, such and such on your team actually saved my life, because I would have ended my life. You know, the pain was unbearable, or such and such connected me to, you know, resources that I had no idea that I could find a job, or I could find, you know, low income assistance and SLOP and other programs that the government supports, you know, for some of these challenges. But I think to bringing back sort of, you know, from the operational point of view to what can we do in terms of, you know, pulling all of this data into, you know, driving population health management, I think that the impact is already immense, right, from the operational pieces. What the social determinants of health data, along with some of the claims data and some of the comorbidities, and if you layer all of the clinical data, the point of care data is something that, you know, we can do so well with Care Select. You truly start, you know, creating these, you know, data cohorts in a way that you can really pinpoint and start predicting with a certain amount of precision that, you know, such and such male, you know, with such and such, you know, background and social conditions would be at, you know, X percent risk for a stroke within that kind of precision of, you know, 2 to 3 years. And that's the power of, you know, where we can sort of combine this, you know, the clinical data, the financial and the payment data, and the social determinants of health data to start putting, you know, these patient cohorts together in a way that we can start use predictive modeling for prevention rather than cure. And I think that is going to be the most significant impact of this, you know, $808 billion industry, if you think. The data is exploding at, you know, almost what I hear various numbers being thrown out, but I think the most common sort of statistics out there is that, you know, we are growing almost 30% of healthcare data there is in the world every few years. And, you know, to think, you know, that all of the Internet of Things and some of the more traditional data that I mentioned earlier, I think that could be a very, very compelling piece to how we start putting this big data in healthcare to work and truly start focusing on prevention, you know, rather than cure.
No, that's absolutely right, Archie. I appreciate your answer. I think what we are all starting to focus on, especially the state of California, is also how do we empower data exchange by keeping SDOH mm-hmm. as its core. And I think that's transformational. And then, as you mentioned, we added a layer of predictive AI, then we are just, you know, kind of getting ahead of the curve and protecting our population from being away from the hospital system and reducing healthcare costs and improving wellness at a, you know, longitudinal manner. I think that's brilliant. We are driving technology-related innovations very fast within the healthcare ecosystem. What are your fears and hopes with this?
So, Smriti, I'm going to say something that I heard, you know, a few years ago, and it has actually stuck by me. Alice Walker, in one of her most famous poems, you know, she says, "Hope is a woman that has lost all fear." So I do feel I'm more hopeful than fearful at this point for where we are and where the state of healthcare system is. And a couple of things that actually do give me hope, you know, there has been so much, you know, churn and noise, if you will, around, you know, big tech entering healthcare and then exiting healthcare. But I'm actually excited by some of the work that's, you know, ongoing at, you know, Amazon and Google. You know, we certainly partner with them, but even outside of our current partnerships, you know, the work that Amazon is doing with Amazon Care, you know, sort of direct to employees, I think that's a phenomenal model. And I think it's one of those things, you know, it's an experimentation. And I think of everything, you know, that's being published, I think they're seeing some amazing results. And to be able to, you know, normalize the private spending in a way that, again, sort of, validates our value-based care ethos. I think that's a great innovation, and we need to continue to experiment and hone some of these non-traditional models, if you will. I think the other place that gives me a lot of hope is, you know, the rapid infusion of, you know, both capital and intellect, if you will, in this idea of artificial general intelligence. I think, you know, you would agree with me, Smriti, I think 5 to 7 years ago, you know, there was this major sort of fear around AI and, you know, is it going to replace physicians? I think now the industry has matured. And I think for most, you know, vendors and for most providers, I think it's the messaging or the positioning is very, very clear around AI. It has to be sort of not artificial intelligence, but really artificial general intelligence. And what I mean by that is, you know, really taking some of the repetitive, non-value-added human work, and let's put it through, you know, so through the machines. And that is exactly the sort of the mode and the tenet of innovation that we've had at Change Healthcare, where we are trying to improve, you know, workflow and productivity with these AI-based innovations, rather than trying to truly focus on some of the creative and more challenging decision-making work. Certainly, there is an aspect of sort of computer-aided diagnosis or computer-aided care delivery, but I do think that, you know, the journey onwards is very, very clear, where this transformation is not going to be about replacing our providers, but it's really about how do we make them more effective by taking away some of the non-creative work. And so I think those are some of the more, and I'm an optimistic person, but I think those two things give me hope for sure.
Yeah, I love your answers, Archie. And I think your exact point on replacement with elevation, I think, is key for people who are working as physicians, as well as people who are working in healthcare. So they know that technology is a tool and it's not a means to an end per se in the factors you're working on. So that brings me to my next question is, are there any specific innovative solutions you'll be focusing on the upcoming year?
We are. I think, you know, I did mention about sort of, you know, all the exciting things we are doing with, you know, Care Select platform and bringing those point of care insights to each of the specialty workflows, if you will. I think the other big piece is around, you know, real-time settlement, which is, you know, really, I think anywhere in the world and anywhere even within the United States, if you are going to, you know, hire a professional for any service, you're going to know exactly what you're going to pay for and what does that service entail. And I think that sort of, you know, not just price transparency, but really having all of the insights, even before the you know, sort of the authorization process is kicked in to the patient. And I know a lot of the state mandates and regulations are also focusing on that kind of transparency. I think we at Change do believe that, you know, really creating that price transparency and real-time, you know, settlement around, you know, the services that you are procuring, and you get exactly what you pay for. So that is a big idea that we are trying to scale and take it to the next level. On the enterprise imaging front within Change, you know, we are continuing to make massive investments in AI and, you know, really adapting radiology and cardiology to drive some of those innovations in a way that makes our diagnosticians even more productive. You know, one of the mottos that we've had is, you know, reduce burnout by 20% and while improving the productivity by 20%. So cheeky one at that, you know, but that 2020 role, you know, really, really suits us in terms of, you know, driving those AI innovations and putting it where it matters the most. And then I think the third big idea that I would actually talk about is really around this idea of ecosystems that I hinted at earlier, where we truly want to align the patient at the center of it, but, you know, the provider and the payer incentives to actually be at the same place where you're driving better outcomes while reducing affordability. And I think right now in a lot of areas, it's a bit disjointed. So how do we use technology to create not only that kind of infrastructure and discussion and implementation, but also start, you know, building the healthcare system of the future? So I think it, you know, we've always been a mission-based company, and I feel like, you know, it's so true today, like it has never been before, you know, with these, you know, massive transformational things that we want to get together for our patients, providers, and payers. So that's where our focus is going to be for the next 3 to 5 years.
If you had to share 3 takeaways for the future of health, what would that be?
I think one of the big ideas that I firmly believe in terms of where our health system will have to pull itself together is around health equity and managing the digital divide. I mean, you know, my grandmother's story about, you know, passing away from a completely manageable condition, you know, that's not an unknown story, even in 2022, with some of the most underprivileged population within the United States. You know, it is mind-blowing in terms of, you know, so many of these conditions are completely treatable, or at least, you know, they can be well managed. And yet, you know, we're not able to support the patients where their needs are, because, you know, we have this huge equity issue in terms of, you know, where the access to care is and, you know, how we can actually improve that. So, you know, I think in that regards, you know, both the industry and the government would have to actually work hand in hand. And I know there, you know, firsthand that there has been a lot of programs, you know, within states of California and Washington that do exactly that. But I think we have to do more. And I don't think it's enough in terms of, you know, how we are handling, you know, really mitigating for this huge digital divide that we have within different factions of the society. I think the other sort of central idea is how do we actually start putting these big data innovations working with big tech and supporting them with sort of these deep expertise that some of the organizations like Change Healthcare or any other, you know, reputed vendor would, you know, is already sort of experienced in. I hear this big debate around, oh my gosh, you know, big tech is coming over for your lunch, or, you know, then the other side of the spectrum is they're obviously going to fail because they don't understand the users, they don't understand the customers, and they're going to fail. And I think there is so much more to be done with these partnerships. I am, for one, actually very excited by Cerner's acquisition by Oracle to see, you know, how they can actually elevate and scale Cerner to a more usable infrastructure and really sort of building those insights with deep learning. I mean, you know, 10 years from today, I don't think we should be wasting humans to actually having repeatable conversations, right? Those should be driven by chatbots and, you know, sort of, again, that idea of artificial general intelligence. You know, we should be focusing on these creative, most complex problems of the world and not sort of, you know, something that a machine can do. So I do think that us having a collaborative, a more partnership view between sort of the innovation, the speed of innovation and scale that big tech can bring. And on the other side, you know, how some of the deeply rooted healthcare organizations can actually collaborate and provide sort of the expertise of the space. I think that would be truly phenomenal in terms of bringing these two synergies together and accelerating the path that we are on. And last but not the least, I do think that, you know, we can certainly learn from, you know, some of the great work that, you know, some of the other countries are doing, socialist medicine or not. But we do feel like, you know, unless you are actually, if you're spending, you know, 40% of, you know, your GDP on your healthcare, and everybody's living, you know, for 100 years, I think it's probably okay. But I don't think, you know, we've truly addressed the problem of waste. And, you know, how do we start streamlining the processes? Again, some of the RPA, so some of the process automation and some of the deep learning technologies is going to really help taking out some of the waste. But we do have to sort of take a step back and start with experimenting, even if in small sort of specialty medicine or, you know, niche areas, niche segments of, you know, how do we really make our organizations lean? So I think those would be sort of the three big ideas that I would leave the listeners with.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Archie, for joining Health Forward today. It was such a pleasure having you.
Likewise, Smriti. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening. This is Health Forward Podcast, and I'm your host, Smriti Kirbanandi.